currently Kirkland. Your source for city news and events in the community. With Erica Sanford at the news desk, stay up to date with weekly news reports on what's happening in Kirkland. Now, here's Erica.
Welcome to Currently Kirkland, where every week you can engage with your community by discovering the latest developments in citywide events. I'm Erica Sanford. You'll have to slow down, take the earphones out, peer more precisely, and if you do, you'll awaken to an invisible community at Juanita Bay Park of birds and bugs.
These birches here 2 years ago, you can still see the rows of holes drilled around the birch tree in different places. That's a sapsucker bar, which is one of the native woodpeckers, and they get the insects out of the sap. And so the photographers just parked here for about a month and got these glorious sapsucker pictures. But when the sapsuckers would take the food back to the nest, you'd get hummingbirds and all kinds of other critters coming and drinking the sap.
Otters.
I've actually flagged down joggers. There's an otter going right under the bridge in the causeway. Joggers jogging with their earplugs in, listening to their radio.
And coyotes.
She was heading down this way on this little boardwalk here, and all of a sudden at the bend down there, a coyote was coming towards her. And the coyote stopped, and she stopped, and she didn't quite know what to do. She was already up where the railings are, so she just sort of backed away slowly, and the coyote just stood there until she backed away. And the minute she was clear of that, the coyote ran and jumped over into the wetland.
Of course, you don't have to do it all by yourself. The 110 acres of Juanita Bay Park have cultivated a core group of volunteer park rangers who lead tours on the first Sunday and third Tuesday of every month, rain or shine. With a little notice, you can also talk them into leading a private tour. A tour guide in a city park might seem a bit excessive, but Juanita Bay Park is no ordinary park. It spans wet meadows, marshes, open water, and wetlands. And it provides habitat for more than 140 birds, 13 types of mammals, and 8 varieties of amphibians and reptiles. The volunteer rangers seem to know just about everything that goes on inside this open space, and they defend it fiercely.
This is upland, this is beaver wetland, this is swamp woods, and this is all wildlife habitat. When the city was talking about putting a boardwalk back into here, mass opposition.
Very mass opposition.
Yes. Will was sitting here in his wheelchair passing out brochures every weekend against this idea of the boardwalk under the bridge and into this area, because it's a nesting area and a wildlife habitat area. And of course, one of the reasons the wildlife is so good here is because we've got protected, unmolested sites over here that aren't getting constantly disturbed by people.
The Eastside Audubon absorbed the volunteer ranger program last year when the city could no longer afford it. But the ones who care about it, and many do, have figured out a way to keep caring for it.
I started just coming to the park like a lot of other people and doing the birding and talking to people and that kind of thing. And then I signed up to be a ranger after I'd completed the wetland management training at UW. And then in 2009, I took the Native Plant Society training, the 8-week training to be a native plant steward. And so now I'm involved, my 2009 group has a half acre of restoration down there. And the 2010 group has a slightly smaller area back in here. And then the rest of the areas under restoration are being done by Earth Corps, does the initial work, and Nona Gantz and the park rangers, or her park stewards, are doing most of the maintenance on that.
To schedule a group tour or to get information on scheduled tours, call the Audubon office at 425-576-8815. In early December, Kirkland will begin installing one of the Neighborhood Connections Program's last projects, a fitness course in Norkirk's Crestwoods Park. The fitness course will complement the 210 stairs connecting 20th Avenue to Crestwoods with a variety of pull-up, push-up, sit-up, and step-up options. For more than a decade, the Neighborhood Connections program was a lot like the neighborhood do-it-yourselfer. It took care of the little essentials, the projects too small to qualify as full-fledged capital improvements, but high priority on a neighborhood's wish list. Streetlights along Forbes Creek Drive and 108th, new walkways in the Highlands and next to Juanita's A.G. Bell Elementary, invasive plant removal in Everest Park, a labyrinth at Rose Hill Meadows, and crosswalks. Crosswalk islands, crosswalk lights, flashing signs at crosswalks, and flashing beacons at crosswalks. In its 10 years, beginning in 2000, the Neighborhood Connections Program provided more than $900,000 for these kinds of projects throughout the city. Neighborhood residents used more than a third of that amount to improve crosswalks or walkways. And all of these projects resulted from direct neighborhood democracy. Every 3 years, city workers mailed postcards to every resident of each neighborhood. The postcard invited residents to propose small-scale infrastructure project ideas. Pedestrian safety projects were most common. From these submissions, residents voted on their highest priorities. The ones with the most votes received the $25,000. In 2010, the program collided with one of Kirkland's most challenging budget cycles.
This budget goes a long way toward being sustainable. So we did a really good job, but there's one thing about this budget that I really regret, and that is that I think we've lost ground on our commitment to neighborhoods. In the 2009-2010 budget, we greatly reduced our funding for neighborhoods. And in this budget, we reduced it even further. We completely eliminated the Neighborhood Connections Grant.
When Kirkland's traffic engineers asked for volunteers to immerse themselves in the city's most intense rush hour traffic, only five took the city's car keys. Jim Egan was one of them.
This is just one small piece where I can, you know, say, hey, look, I'm interested in this topic, so I'm going to do something at a very, very low level, you know, maybe almost, I wouldn't say meaningless, but it may not mean a lot in the big picture of balanced transportation. But hey, if it helps in one little bit, you know, just as I was out there counting bicycles on the roadway, this might help in making some of those decisions someday.
The decisions he's talking about could affect how thousands of Puget Sounders start and end their work days. Those decisions could synchronize traffic lights and help pay for the north-south Cross Kirkland Connector Trail. Egan's assignment is to drive 8 congested routes as many times as possible between 7 and 9 in the morning. While he's driving, a GPS unit tracks how fast he's traveled from one point to another and another. He and 4 other volunteers are doing this now, and they'll do it again in December, after the state starts tolling on the 520 bridge. The data Egan and the 4 other volunteers collect will reveal to Kirkland's traffic engineers where the high-impact spots are now, and even more important, where they will be after the state begins charging motorists for driving across the 520 bridge. City administrators will use this information to show the state how the tolls have affected everyday life in Kirkland. And if the impacts are significant, they could provide administrators with leverage to negotiate some compensation. Research has shown tolls to be a predictable influence of driving behavior. But predicting which of the 3 routes drivers will use to cross the lake can be tricky. Remember, you can access any episode of Currently Kirkland on demand on the city's website, on your mobile devices, and on YouTube. We'd also love to hear from you. If you have any news tips, suggestions, or comments, please send them to kirklandtv@kirklandwa.gov. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next week.